Chris is an avid keen walker, I think is the best way of putting it, yeah. And has recently done for Kevin Kennett and Avon Canal. To you. Thank you.
Thank you. So for those who don't know me, I'm Chris Bacon. I used to be in the fire service for over 30 years, and you'd think naturally that that's what I would want to talk about, but I don't. Today, I'm going to talk about a walk that myself and my wife did over the last couple of years. And it was a walk from Reading to Bristol. It's 95 miles-ish, depends which book you look at. Some say 85, some say 105. I've gone for a 95. And we did this in 2 5-day blocks. And traditionally, we always do at least one distance walk a year. A little bit of history about the Kennett and Avon Canal. Obviously, it starts at Reading and it finishes at Bristol. It started off in 1723 with the Kennett Navigation. Now, I don't know if you can see over here, but this is Reading, and we go across right through to Bristol. The Kennett Navigation was the first 20 miles from Reading to Newbury. And basically, it was the River Kennett with a few grass-side locks that they made out of turf. And those locks didn't last very well, inevitably, and over the years had to be replaced. But that's where the Kennett Navigation started over there. And at the other end, the Avon Navigation was the first 15 miles from Bristol to Bath, with obvious connotations of the docks at Bristol being able to ferry goods, bulk goods in particular, up to Bath. And of course, there was a lot of building going on in that particular area. And so those two started off. And in 1794, as you can see, a few years later, there was work to join the two parts together to become the Kennett and Avon Canal. You can see why they wanted to join it up, or at least you think you can. There were 60 miles in the middle between those two points, with a lot of small towns in between, and they thought this was a commercial opportunity, but not for the reasons that perhaps you think. It wasn't a case of getting from Bristol to Reading that they were bothered about. It was avoiding having to sail round the southern part of England from Bristol right the way round to the Thames for bulk goods. And that was most hazardous and very difficult and problematic. And so they thought if they built this canal, not only would it generate trade locally, but it would save that hazardous journey around the outside and would be very lucrative, both to see trade from London to Bristol and Bristol to London without going round the outside. The canal was good for about 40 years, very commercially viable, did well, until 1852 when the Great Western Railway started. It basically followed the same route. It carried goods a lot more quickly, a lot more securely, and basically undercut their rivals on the canals. But just for good measure, just in case there was any element of competition, the Great Western Railway bought the canal as well. They got government approval and they promised, Scout's honour, that they would still invest in the canal as they developed the rail services. They were telling porcupines because it went into the canal a 100-year decline, gradually fizzling away because all of the trade went on the railway. In 1938, before the war started, the Kennett and Avon Canal was to be a defensive line in case there was an attack, and it was basically a tank trap, the Kennett and Avon Canal, a line beyond which they would rally the troops and hope to impede the advance of any invaders. So along the route you will see pillboxes and bunkers. You'll see some photos of those as we go through. But by 1955, the canal was mainly derelict, and in a poor state of repair. Different locks were okay, but many had got the old proverbial shopping trolleys thrown in, bedsteads, and goodness knows what. Total waste, and you couldn't go and navigate the canal in any one section at all. In 1968, some volunteers got together to restore a beam engine, a big steam engine. It was a pump that used to feed water to the canals at a place called Crofton. And arising after that, various local groups got together to restore particular parts of the canal. And it was opened by the Queen officially as a complete unit all the way through from Reading to Bristol in 1990. And they had a trust, the Kennet and Avon Canal Trust, that's in charge, that's now part of the Canal and Rivers Trust, which took over from British Waterways. And so we start the walk. Myself and my wife did this walk, as I say. It was in June last year for 5 days, and in July this year for 5 days. A strange place to start, but that's where the walk tells you to start. You walk through the station, and when you get to the opposite side, you go outside, and you are at the River Thames. The Thames, as you can see, is quite navigable, especially for narrow boats, and you walk down this bit here towards this bridge. You go under the bridge, you turn right, and that is where the River Kennet and the Kennet and Avon Canal actually starts, on the River Thames. So you can see navigation from the old London docks right up the River Thames and up the Kennet and Avon Canal to Bristol was a viable proposition. That's the only notification that you get, because for the first few miles, the river and the canal are synonymous. They are the same thing, because they developed the river into a channel, put some locks in, as I say, turf locks, and that's where they then started to transport goods from Newbury to Reading and Reading to Newbury. It's typical towpath at that particular point. I'll just reflect on one particular thing, that is that Reading don't appreciate what they've got on their doorstep. There was very poorly kept, very large amounts of graffiti, bottles, refuse, everything. And this initial section goes through one of their prime waterfront areas, which is their shopping centre. There's loads of bars and restaurants looking out onto all this rubbish. It's really embarrassing, and I think it would be an embarrassment if they heard me talk about it. You get these signposts, and this is where I say it says 105 miles there. Don't believe it. I think it's 95. That's what the sat-nav told me. These funny sort of signs, sometimes different colours, are a feature of the Kent and Avon Canal, especially in the early miles that you go through. The footpath itself, off you go, it's a traditional footpath, but many parts are accessible for wheelchairs and buggies. And so I'd recommend, you know, if you want to cycle, if you want to have access to take people for a nice day out, the paths, the towpaths, are great. I mentioned the pillboxes because of the defensive line, and you'll notice here that every lock has got a number. So it's very easy to chart your progress as you are walking along the route. You get to Thatcham, down the track a bit, and there are loads of old gravel pits that are now filled in, and they're made into a wildlife reserve. The reserve near Thatcham is one of the largest in the south of England, and so you get this on one side of you as you're walking along the actual canal. That's one of the oldest wayposts along the way, not been touched at all, probably since the day it was put in. And we end up at Thiel. Why have I got that there? It's because that's where I parked my car on the first day. And then we caught a train into Reading Station, and then we walked back from Reading to Thiel. And that repeats itself through the journey. We drive the car to the end of the day where we're going to stop, we catch the train back to where we're going to walk, and then we walk the requisite distance, about 10 miles a day. Typical sorts of locks, I say, with the lock numbers. Notice the trees. In terms of environment, it's absolutely superb, with the bushes, the trees, the amount of vegetation, flora and fauna. It's just amazing because it's mainly undisturbed. And so if ever you want to look for a pristine environment in terms of a walk, this is it. I've got a great penchant for standing in the path looking, you know. Anyway, you won't see my wife in many photos. You can see the path here is a bit narrower. That's how it is sometimes, but mainly it's quite well produced and surfaced. So all sorts of swing bridges along the way to let people cross. My wife's standing there on the bridge. And just before a boat comes along in a minute, we see there some of the fungi that you just see along the path. Obviously no herbicides, pesticides used at all, so you get loads of this along the way. There's a boat coming through the bridge that my wife was standing on a second or two ago. And you thought a canal lock was a canal lock, was a canal lock. Well, it's not. There's about 30 different sorts, and this particular one is a scalloped edge lock, probably the most decorative that you can get. There's all sorts of patterns, all sorts of sorts that you see along the way. And you can see it's so good, this particular one, as an example, they've even got a board along the side to help you understand it. The path crosses from one side of the canal to the other as you go along. I don't know why that is. It's probably about landowner rights and stuff like that in the distant past. But again, you can see that the path is jolly good. And the trees overhanging give a great environment for birds, especially herons, which we'll see in a minute or two. My wife on the bridge. And of course, along the way, there are numerous watering places, pubs, tea shops, and it's most enjoyable in terms of a walk. Some of the walks you do, you walk and you see no one or nothing all day. Here, you're seeing something new all the time, either boats passing by, people passing by, or calling in at the pub. Great. It was. You can even see my finger over the camera there. That's how good the photos are. The row barge gives you a clue about the past. This is a different sort of lock. There's even girders here to try and protect it. There are only two of these locks left in the country. These are the locks that I told you about earlier, where they are turf-sided, and there's still two remaining in this particular chain of locks, and they've only got these two in the country. And they're a nightmare to keep, because they keep washing away and stuff. Great views and reflections as you go down the towpath, and we come to the ubiquitous signpost that tells me I'm almost at Newbury. And at Newbury, they've done quite a lot of restoration. If any of you have been there at Newbury, the wharf side there, these are all tea rooms, these barges. There's a park over this side here, the other side, with a pond and sculptures. It's all very nice and well worth a trip if you've never been and seen it. The locks, as you go down, there are wharves and warehouses along the side. And some lovely views as you take in the vista, with the reflections and stuff as you go down. We went in this particular part of the walk in June. If you go in May, all these spring flowers are out, and as I say, they don't use pesticides, herbicides, and it's just a profusion of blossom, stuff in the hedgerow. It's absolutely fantastic to see. Oh, surprise, surprise, this particular part of the canal, we've got how it used to be when it first started, horse-drawn barges. If you wanted to go on this trip up near Kintbury, you could do so. Coliseum coaches run a trip with a cream tea and a trip on a horse-drawn barge, and you could book that any time you like. It's about, I don't know, 30 quid, something like that. So you even get a window into the past as you're going along sometimes. It did take them some time to get past, I hasten to add. Loads of This bit at the side here, bulrushes, flag iris, all sorts of vegetation, is a great habitat for all sorts of creatures, and particularly dragonflies, damselflies, and you just see hundreds, if not thousands, as you're on the walk. Some boats take over the theme and decide to actually do some stuff themselves. Some of these boats, that's a double width boat, are very opulent, is the word. Others, a bit like this, a bit dowdy, but no doubt the driver is still learning the ropes on this one. He's learning, obviously. You see as you go along these marks in the side of bridges, and that's in the dim distant past where horses were pulling the barges and the ropes cut into the side of the soft stone on the bridges, and they've left them there for posterity, which is great. We get to Hungerford, and this actually is a picture of the little tea room that we went to. Hungerford, it means hanging wood ford, so that's how you get the name Hungerford. And they celebrate Hocktide in Hungerford. Hocktide's just about Easter, and they beat the boundaries of commoners' land, and they call it the Tutty Men Visit. And so you can see that this particular cafe is called the Tutty Pole, the Tutty Pole. And it's a very lovely setting. You can't imagine in this particular setting when you see it what happened there in August 1987, which of course was the Hungerford Massacre, where a local man took a Kalashnikov rifle and shot 16 people dead in the town and 15 people seriously injured. And you can actually visit and see a memorial garden to the tragedy that happened at that time. It brings it home to you when you actually see something like that. Along the way, we see other forms of the animal. This is a slow worm just crawling across the path as you go along. And I keep flashing back to the number of trees that there are down the bank. We get little flowers. This is cranesbill. You see masses of it in different places, and it's obviously to do with the substrate of the soil, why they actually grow where they grow. Along the way you see lovely country churches and war memorials. This again is Hungerford, and eventually we come to Kintbury. Kintbury is a lovely village. This is an Airbnb that we stayed at. Anyone heard of Airbnb? Anyone not? Okay, Airbnb, great for this sort of thing when you're planning a walk, because you can virtually guarantee accommodation within walking distance of where you want to be. You don't have to go to the nearest Travelodge, Premier Inn or whatever. It was simple accommodation, it was very clean, nice, good shower, TV and breakfast at the local pub. Very nice, and I think it was £45 for a double per night. From there, as you walk down towards the canal side again, you reflect that just away from Kintbury, there is Inkpen Beacon, and for those who know it, it's just over the border in Berkshire. Several walks start from there, the Wayfarer's Way, which I've walked, the Test Valley Way starts from there, and it's only perhaps a quarter of a mile from this particular location. The Wayfarer's Way goes due south to Emsworth. The Test Valley Way goes all the way along the Test Valley right to Southampton, to the tide mill there. Nice vistas as you go along, different sorts of bridges. And then we get to this particular thing, which is a plaque above a tunnel. It's called the Bruce Tunnel, and it's named after a man called Thomas Bruce, who was the Earl of Aylesbury. There's no towpath. The horses were led over the top, and the men inside on the bargees used to pull themselves along with a chain. It was a long job because the actual tunnel is 459 metres long. Can you imagine digging that out with the tools they had at the time? Picks and shovels, wooden wheelbarrows, and they had to dig through a hillside over a quarter of a mile. And of course, he's there for posterity. No doubt he had a bit of a backhander as well for letting them use his land. So you go up the steps, over the top, down the other side, you look back to the tunnel where the barges would go through. A little bit further along at Burbage, they've recreated one of the dockside or wharfside cranes. They've made this as a replica. And it's a simple winch affair, but it was very rudimentary, but obviously worked for what they needed at the time. I mentioned our friend the Heron. This particular one decided he was going to play a game with us. We walked along about 100 metres. He flew up the bank 100 metres. We walked 100 metres. He flew up the bank 100 metres. It went on for nearly about a quarter of a mile, just flying ahead of us all the time. He eventually got fed up of it and decided to fly properly. And he flew right over the top of us and perched in a tree. And soon afterwards, as we stopped, he actually dived in and got a fish, which was amazing. Yes, as you're walking along, you do have refreshment. This is not a bar that we actually bought, a Snickers bar, done in. And that's how you felt sometimes when it was hot on that particular day. Along the footpath, a lot of the time you see helicopters coming across, and they are doing visual flights following the path of the canal. This particular aircraft is probably from Middle Wallop, the air training school, and sometimes you get helicopters coming across from Yeovilton, and it's what they do in terms of if their instruments fail, they have to do line of sight flying, and they choose the canal, and there's a particular hilltop site that they hover over. This one is a Chinook that came over soon after that one. More toadstools and stuff. I don't know if they're edible or not. Anyone know? I don't know. I looked in a book, couldn't decipher what they were, but they were there anyway. More pillboxes, and often a line back from that, probably in the tree at the back there, on occasions you would find a command bunker, which you could see hidden away in the bushes. They did plan for this particular invasion, but fortunately it never took place. I don't know how effective it would have been. And eventually we end up at Pusey Wharf, and Pusey Wharf on this map is about here, halfway, 50 miles in. This was what used to be a wharf or a dockside storage place. It's now a pub and a restaurant, parking area and picnic tables and all sorts of stuff. A nice stopping off place, and it was out half of the trip. Tells you a bit about it on the board. Pusey Wharf, it's not a million miles from Devizes, so if you go into that area for the day, you can call here and have a look. So that's where we finished. It's also where we started the next time that we got back to it, which was July this year. So you see all sorts of sights on the canal. What happened next? Any ideas?
The fell in.
Well, obviously the fell in, yes they did, but what happened was, you can see where the dog is pointing. He sees a duck. He thinks, I like that duck, and he dives in after the duck. The child, so the dog goes this way, the child goes that way, the board tips over, the mum obviously goes in, and I'm thinking it's life-saving time. So I'm taking a step forward, the child goes right under, and then all of a sudden, because they've got a life jacket on, he comes bursting up, and the mum says, oh, hello, Tinkerbell, it's all right, wasn't that lovely? And I'm nearly having a heart attack at the side there. But you see all sorts of funny sights along the way. Now, you come to some very interesting bridges as you go along over the canal. Now, this particular lady was a landed gentry person. She had a country estate, and she wasn't going to have any old brick rubbish, looking out of her drive, she wanted this to be looking like something of the status that she was. And so she negotiated with the canal company to build this, and not only that, but to make it look, the canal, about 10 times wider than it would normally be, so it looked like she'd got a country pond with a nice bridge, and they had to do this to placate her to get agreement for the canal and the bridge to be where it was. It's called Lady Bridge. Along the canal, there are many moorings. There's quite an alternative society along the canal. People who've, many normal people who do leisure activities, but a lot of people who live in on their canal barge boat most of the year round and enjoy living simply. And we met loads of them. They look a bit strange, some of these people, but they are lovely people. They do no harm to anyone. They've got cycles, they don't agree with cars and all that sort of stuff. It's all wind generators and solar power and stuff like that. But nonetheless, these people are part of the canal community as you go along. We get to Honey Street Mill Cafe, and it's an old mill and dockside and wharf and warehouse place. It's a great place. It's near to Crofton Beam Engine. So if you're into steam engines, it's a great place to go. After you've been there, you call at this particular place. Honey Street Mill. Our son is in Thailand, and at this particular mill, they were selling all sorts of Thai and Burmese goods in one of the warehouses. And as you went outside, you saw this particular thing, which is the Pusey White Horse, often known as the Alton Barnes White Horse. It's in the news today. Extermination Rebellion, whatever it is. They went and defaced this over the weekend and put a big black cross in the middle of it, little knowing that only last week the kids had just rechalked all of it and spent hundreds of pounds and hours of labour doing it. And then it was trashed over the weekend by these so-called environmentalists. Great. I have no other comment to make. I mentioned about the bulrushes and stuff as you look down the vista of the canal. Birds, all sorts of bird life, uses that for perching, for getting the insects and stuff. Nice opportunity for them. And as you look back over the hillside, I mentioned a hill where the helicopters go over the top of. This is it. And there was a flush of poppies as you went down the track, not just here but further along. And that was also to do with the substrate that you found in the fields. Another closer view, perhaps, of the Alton Barnes horse as you went down the canal towpath. You get scabious and other nice plants as you go along. Again, cranesbill. There are just a profusion of all sorts of plant and wildlife. You get some lovely boat names as you're going along. This is Nog Number One. Lapse of Reason. Switched Off. Very nice, isn't it? You know, to think that that's their sentiment for life at that particular time. Honey Street Mill has a lovely outside cafe. I can recommend the chocolate brownies. And along the side, you get information boards that tell you what's going on, any closures that's happening and so on. It's mainly for the canal barges and people who use that, but it's also interesting for pedestrians as well. Help for Heroes had a boat moored here, where they obviously gave people opportunity of holidays and respite as part of their recuperation process. We took an evening meal at this particular pub. It was nothing from the front, but when you got out the back, it was just, this was in July, this was just a profusion of hanging baskets, outlook on the canal at the back with boats puttering past. It was just idyllic. It was really nice. And there was no canned music, there was no jukeboxes, it was just how a pub should be. Our friend the Heron, and another type of swing bridge, just for pedestrian access. Now, I was going to put a competition on to the person who could count the number of signets that we see throughout the presentation, because we did take a lot of photos. My wife loves swans and signets, so we got swans and signets. So, you know, if you want to count them, you can, and if you don't, that's all right. One of the swans had 11 signets down here, so they must have been quite happy. Oh, and then we come across this. I wonder what this is. Any ideas? Well, it's on the footpath. It's on the towpath. No, bafflement. Well, did you know that the canals, when they started, were a superhighway? And this is part of the superhighway. Canal towpaths up and down the country are used to run fibre optic cables because they don't have to dig up pavements, they don't have to reinstate tarmac, and so all the way down the towpaths, not just in the Canadian Canal but other places as well, the superhighway fibre optics for broadband and other services are there at your feet. Roughly every kilometre is one of these. Again, there I am striking the pose, looking down. Typical brick bridge, more pillboxes, and some of the people who are on the barges are quite artisans. They do carving and make stuff and try and sell it as you go past. There's a pheasant. There's the fox trying to get the pheasant. And we end up at Devizes. A nice market town, a nice wharf. It's the headquarters there at Devizes of the Kennetnaven Canal Trust. There's a shop, there's a museum, there's all sorts of stuff. Well worth the trip. You'll understand why I say worth the trip in a minute or two. Devizes itself, lovely market town, worth the trip anyway. The typical sort of monuments, and this particular thing is a commemoration of the Women's Land Army. So it was a very rural district round Devizes in the war. And the Bear Hotel. The Bear Hotel dates from 1554. And there the travelling justices used to actually take up residence in the hotel, run the court in the pub. Nice place, you can understand, can't you? When they were metering out their judgments. That's as long ago as 1554. Lovely flowers and the old carved thing about the bear. Typical of the town square. It's a fountain commemorating a particular battle or something like that. I can't remember. Just to give you a flavour of what it looked like. And then we come across the pièce de résistance of this particular wall. And why? It's about a mile outside of Devizes and you come across this. And it's stunning. It's called Carnhill Locks. It's a Grade 2 listed structure, and it is an integral part of the canal. People are still using it. And there are 16 locks here out of a run of 29, and it covers a fall of 72 metres in 3.6 kilometres. What a feat of engineering it is. Unbelievable. This was it was built between 1800 and 1810, and the engineer responsible was a man called John Rennie. He also built some other structures, which we'll talk about in a bit further on the walk. But just to see it on a picture is great. To actually be there and experience boats going up it, it's just astonishing. You cannot believe that at this particular time, when it was built, what this must have been like. There are all sorts of technical problems in building this lock, not least of which that every one of these locks has to have a side piece to make sure there's sufficient water. And it's one of the few places in the country where you have to have these extra side pieces to balance out the water supply. At the bottom here, there would have been a big beam engine. It's now been replaced with diesel engines, of course, but that was fantastic technology for its time. And you think that walking the towpath is flat, but obviously you're coming downhill from Devizes down here. And when you get halfway down, there's another stretch still of the other locks to get to the bottom. Fantastic place to visit. There's a car park, there's a tea room, it's easily accessible, and the slope is fairly gentle if you want to walk. Fishing on the canal is permitted in certain places, but not in others. At Devizes there's Wadsworth Brewery, and they do tours. I didn't sample it myself, otherwise I might have remembered it. It was always closed when we arrived there, which was a shame, but it is a good tour, and it is good beer, I'm told. When you get to the bottom, this is the pumping station just through here, at the bottom of those locks, and there is a swing bridge which gives access to Carnhill Marina. Canadian geese, and sometimes the towpath is shared with other people, namely cyclists. And some are nice and kind to pedestrians, and others are not. This was a juggernaut that started our way, and gradually it came down. They were all ringing the bells, which was fortunate, but they were doing about 20 miles an hour, and woe betide anyone who got in the way. They're on a day trip out from Oxford, trying to do the canal in a day and a half. That's the full lot of the canal in a day and a half down the towpath. More names on the barges, Mr. Luddite. And we came to a particular section that had had vandalism. And so the residents in the area thought, no, we're not going to give in to this. We're not going to put barbed wire fences and stuff. We're going to do something decorative to make it attractive so people don't want to vandalise it. And so this association, local association, planted wildflowers. The kids got involved. They put picnic benches out, which we frequented, book hotels, and it was really lovely. In the middle of nowhere, where it had been trashed and bottles and everything else previously, but now it was being looked after because the residents had taken some trouble over it. A little bit further on, we come to where the Wilson Box Canal should join this particular canal. It was a branch of this canal, and that went up to the River Thames higher up there. But that canal only lasted a year and was closed. And there have been plans since 1977 to open section of that canal to open onto the Kennet-Navan Canal. The Wilts and Berkshire Canal. Yes, this is a residence. You wouldn't believe it, would you? But it is. Someone was living there. Unbelievable. Obviously a recluse of some sort, and you go from that to next door, this PV panels. You find loads of those as you're walking down the towpath. The soaked ground is not good for much, but you can put these things on it and make money out of it. So you went from the hovel one way to this particular boat, double width, solar power, satellite stuff, satellite phone, satellite communications, double glaze, triple glaze, centrally heated, £350,000 worth on the same little stretch of water. I just love willow trees, do you? They look really fantastic. Well, to me they do anyway, they look fantastic. And so we got, beg your pardon, we get... Anyway, we get to this particular park, which is Bradford on Avon Marina. Bradford on Avon, as it says there, used to have three wharves, coal and barley, peaceful, and it is, and it's still that way. It's in a valley, a very steep-sided valley, the canal and the river go along the bottom. You come across, have you ever seen those? Remember those? Used to be at Gloucester Docks, England's Glory Matches. Where are they made now? China. That's right. They're made in China, yeah. And we come across at Bradford and Avon, a lovely tea room. Typical wharfside locks, and loads of people at this particular place. It's a tourist trap. And, we actually get to sit down And here, again, the Kentnaven Canal Trust have got a shop, a bit of a museum, and work parties operating out of here. They run this tea room to generate some dosh. And who's running the tea room but some Turkish immigrants? And so, you know, you have difficulty communicating, and maybe you think the bad thing. But we let it be known that we wanted to know how to, where and how to catch the bus from this particular place. It was about half a mile walk away. So we asked the man. He said, "Oh, no problem. I close in 10 minutes. I will take you where you want to go." So it just shows you, see, these people left the borderlands of Turkey on the Syrian border about 2 years ago, relocated to be with family in Trowbridge, and here they were working hard, running a business, and a totally different outlook to what you would find perhaps from ordinary people. Don't put the bad stuff on immigrants, because a lot of them want to work and work hard. This is our daily sheet that we used to have as to where we were going, which buses we were going to catch, which where we could get a taxi if we needed to, all sorts of stuff. Every evening we spent just having a little look at what we were going to do the next day. Down the towpath, ideal for cyclists, and we come to Avoncliff Aqueduct. John Rennie, our friend, built this. It's about 50 metres down to the River Avon. It takes the canal over the River Avon. And again, a miracle at the time of engineering to build this. And if you could see it from the other side, it looks like faced Bath stone. A fantastic structure. No scaffolding, metal scaffolding at that time. No laser beams to level it, and yet built inch perfect. And there we go with the actual way across the aqueduct for narrow boats, as you look the opposite direction down the actual gorge. How many people does it take to drive a boat? A narrow boat? Well, three in this instance. Very strange it was hilarious. We saw the three wives or partners sitting in the front having a cup of tea, and the three blokes at the back arguing about how to steer this boat. It was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. A bit further on, we come to the Dundas Aqueduct. Again, a massive feat of engineering. In order to get that canal from Bristol to Reading, there were three obstacles. There was getting over the river gorge in two places. There was the flight of locks. And I'll think of what the other one was. Oh yes, the tunnel, in order to get that continuity on the right level over 85 miles. It's genius, without all the modern things that we have today. So that's, as I said, Dundas Aqueduct. Just past there, and you may not realise, we get at this particular point to a little bit of Somerset. Somerset, North Somerset anyway, used to have a coal mining industry at this time. They built this very small canal so that they could take coal away from the mine down this particular canal and onto the Kentnaven Canal and be used further down in Bristol. It's 6 feet wide, so there's only one boat in and the same boat coming out, all right? There's not room to pass. Here we are then, shipwreck. There's a shipwreck. Oh, there we are. It was hilarious to see that some wag had painted this on a derelict boat at the side there. And when this was taken in July, of course, we thought Brexit would be done and dusted. And here we are, we're still on the good ship Brexit, aren't we? There we are. Say no more. Next door to that, derelict boat, this lovely boat, very well kept, pristine, etc. And then out of all character, it's called Party Animal. You're as traditional as you can get, and then they call it Party Animal. There we go. Our friends the Signets, and we get to Bathampton. Bathampton now, we are getting round about here. Bathampton was famous for its quarries for stone. And obviously the stone came out of the Bathampton quarries and went down on the canal to and the river to Bath, obviously. The quarries have long since gone, and it became famous, Bathampton did, for something else. And that is, plasticine was invented and manufactured at this particular place all those years ago. And little did we know that as kids, you know, our plasticine probably wasn't made here then by that time. It had been, you know, exported around the world and the patents gone and all the rest of it. But it was invented here in about 1800. Birth of the business. A lot of the walk features around food and drink, a nice canal side cafe where we stayed just before we entered Bath. And immediately you go into Bath, you can notice it. Whereas Reading was rough and not looked after, the canal here is appreciated and treasured by the people who live close by it. The bridges, the towpaths are all looked after. The locks are well looked after and painted. The Georgian mansions on the side of the bank. This is a, would you believe it, a pump house chimney, but they have to have it done nicely because it's Bath. It's not just any old rubbish. And then we got to Harpenny or Halfpenny Bridge, where it cost a halfpenny in the old days to get over the bridge into Bath itself. As I say, lovely, well kept, and I couldn't pass the opportunity to have a sign to Bath Rugby. Anyone watching the rugby at the moment? Yeah, you know, Bath Rugby used to be up there at the top, didn't it, some years ago, struggling a bit at the moment. There we are. So I had to have that sign in, just for me. And then we walked, took our car to a place called Keynsham, just down the road, about 9 miles, and we parked just behind this church. And as I walked round the corner, I saw that it's St John's Church at Keynsham. And as we're in St John's Church here, I thought it was quite pertinent, I parked just behind it. Having parked there, we then caught some transport back to Bath so that we could walk back to Keynsham, St John the Baptist Church. Again, the walk from Bath onwards is fantastic, lovely views, well kept. Glorious vistas with the trees, an old beam engine shed, well restored. The river here just about becomes the River Avon. We're almost at the River Avon here. Flood levels were about 24 feet over where I was standing on the path. It would have obliterated most of Bath at that time in about the 1880s. Different flood marks as you went through there. They're a bit indistinct, but trust me, they are there. And then we get to a regeneration project, stroke development, that happened at Bath. Quayside development, very swanky apartments, again using the river and the canal to best effect. Very expensive. You're talking, you know, £500,000 upwards for a two-bed apartment and so on, very swish, and great. Anyway, we move on and we continue from Bath, moving on towards Keynsham. We get to the last of the big locks. This particular lock is notable because of the depth of rise and fall of the water, nearly 6 metres, 18 feet. And in Bristol Harbour, they had to overcome that sort of a problem where there was a great difference between high and low tide. They did it in Bristol by having a floating dock. And that they recognised that from fairly early on. They would have to do that to make the port viable. So this is the last lock, the deep lock, on this particular section. There's still remnants of the old British waterways days. These signs have not been removed. This is a particular type of barge that you don't see. It's a Dutch barge. You would see it in Amsterdam. You would see it if you go all down the Dutch coast, the Flemish coast. But you will find these occasionally that they were sailed across. They sailed them down the coast to Calais, and then at a very opportune moment, under supervision, they sail them across, and then they go up the canal network. You can buy a barge like this very cheaply if you go to Amsterdam on the continent. And then it's probably 100 years old, but in fine fettle. Along the canal footpath, going now almost to Keynsham, loads of opportunities to hire narrow boats at this particular section along here. Some people live in this section as well. It's quite adjacent to Bristol, as I said. And we get to Saltford Brass Mill. This was built in 1750. They used to float the ingots of brass up from Bristol, work on them in the furnace, make jam kettles, saucepans, all sorts of things, and then the same goods would go down on the barge back to Bristol. It is a Grade 2 listed, and they can't do a thing to that because they do regular enactments of the processes that they used to do all the years ago from 1750. Our friend is back, the old signpost. We know we're on the right route. And we come almost now where we're cutting for the last bit where I said the original Bristol navigation started. This is where it finished. And we're just on the final running now to Bristol. We go over this railway bridge, and we walk over the railway bridge because the railway has long since gone. And when you go over this bridge, you drop down onto the river bank, and we've virtually lost any form of canal towpath at all. We walk through the fields, and in the distance you can see something. I'll tell you at this stage, it's a factory. We get to some dockside wharves, and we are now... Oh yes, here we are. Just our friendly neighbour. Trespassers will be shot, survivors will be shot again. We get here to Keynsham, and it shows there, I think, where it's saying Bristol 8 3/4, but by my reckoning it was 9. And so now it's almost the almost all of it's the River Avon. Most of the locks have gone. It is the river. It is reasonably navigable. As we look down over the side, and the factories that we could see in the distance are here, but they're not factories anymore. They are luxury flats. And this used to be the Fry's chocolate factory, just outside of Bristol. In 1920s, it employed 5,000 people. It was taken over by Cadbury's and gradually declined till in about 2010, there were 500 people working here. Kraft Corporation of America wanted to buy out Cadbury's, so they said, we want to buy it, and Cadbury was going to close the factory. But the Monopolies and Mergers Commission said, if you want to buy that factory, Mr. Kraft, you have to give an undertaking that you will continue to employ the people at Keynsham. 500 jobs. And they said, oh yes, that's okay, no problem at all. We will do that. 2 weeks after the transaction took place, Kraft served a notice they were closing the factory, the loss of 500 jobs. The machinery was transported to Poland, and they remained derelict for a good few years. It's only recently that there's this massive scheme to regenerate the area, to make these into flats, and to bring it back into good community use. But it just shows you the deviousness of politics. The footpath here is very poor. It's alongside a river. We can see the new flats as they are in the distance. And we start to on the running now into Bristol. Many places, pubs, where people can virtually walk out of Bristol to these pubs, have a drink and walk back. The river is very benign itself, hardly any flow. This particular motorway over the top is one of the main roads into Bristol, and we walk underneath it. And you know you're getting close to Bristol when the passenger boats come out on a jaunt from the city. You pick up the River Avon Trail, and we go along what's called the Feeder Canal, which takes you virtually into the very heart of Bristol. As always with some of these things, when the canal started, they were industrial, they were dirty, smelly, horrible places. And it seemed appropriate to have this run into Bristol along a similar sort of track. It was the back end of Bristol, for want of a better term, and it was the scrap merchants, it was rubbish stuff everywhere, all of that. And we walked along here alongside the feeder canal, which you just saw, and suddenly, lighting up my day, were a couple of inflatable stuff on top of a second-hand tyre dealer's workshop. And it made my day. So there you go. Just, you know, as you do. We got then into the final throes of the walk, Totterdown Basin. This is where it all happened all those years ago. It was a hive of industry and activity. You can see now it's semi-derelict, but this land is some of the most valuable land in Bristol. You can imagine what it's going to be. It's going to be penthouses, it's going to be shops, it's going to be around this particular basin. Very valuable indeed, but derelict at the moment. And we make our final approach. We go up towards Templemead Station. Templemead Station, remember we talked about the Great Western Railway, Isambard Kingdom Brunel. This is his western terminus at Templemead Station. It's named so because Temple was a very famous church that was there when this was built, a very ancient church from about 900 AD. Mead means a meadow. So it was a church in the meadow, and that's where his western terminus was built. Fantastic edifice. Anyone been to Bristol Temple Mead?
Yeah.
Beautiful place, beautiful. As you approach all the fantastic Grade 2 listed buildings, you eventually walk up there. You go through the station, onto the platform, out the platform, and here's one of the old engine sheds. You walk out of the engine shed, where there's just parking, and you come on to Temple Quays. This is where all Bristol has been regenerated. It's a superb place to visit if you've never been. Good for shopping, good for outdoor socialising and the cafes and bars. We sat on this amphitheatre and ate our lunch, and then we started down Temple Quays. Down, straight down here, and you keep going and keep going. This is the river within the confines of its boundary. The river and the canal are the same at this point. You continue going down, walking down, and you come to this funny structure. And I couldn't believe this when I saw it, and actually what it is, it's called a shot tower. 1969 it was built. You can tell it was built of concrete, not much of a plan to it or fitting in with the architecture, but they used to manufacture shot by having droplets of molten lead at the top and dropping it through water. By the time it got to the bottom, it was nice and round and lead shot. And it's now closed, and it's now an office block at the top there. But interesting in terms of history anyway. We then get onto a further quayside, more old than the Temple Quay. This is where they have the floating locks along the side here. And we're gradually moving now to where the finish of the walk happens. You can't access the Kennetnaven Canal from the sea any longer because it's all closed off. All the docks now are at Portishead and out at the end of the Bristol Channel. But this now is for leisure purposes only. As we move along here, this is all the cobbles are original. There were a lot of dockside wharves, warehouses, all been refurbished, renewed. And we get to this particular thing, which is called Perrow's Bridge. Perrow was a slave in the 18th century. He lived in Bristol, he died in Bristol, and it's a memorial, this, to the slave trade that happened in Bristol. Bristol wealth was built on slavery. And so just in recognition of that, they've named this bridge Perro, after Perro Jones, who was a slave who worked in one of the big houses for 30 years before he died. He came from Africa to the West Indies, and he came with his master from the West Indies to Bristol and lived there. George V fountain, it just commemorates workers in the area and is a well-known landmark in Bristol to the working class, thinking of how hard people had to work on the canals, in workshops, in smelting furnaces and stuff like that. It's a memorial to that. And we're now on the final 100 yards to the end of our walk. In the distance there is where we're headed. And it is the statue of Neptune, god of the sea. It's been there donkey's years, that particular memorial. And it's the end of our walk. A superb walk, very enjoyable. I commend either bits of it to you. You can do day walks, you can do longer walks, you can cycle it, you can go in a trolley along it. Whatever you do, don't miss it, because what you've seen on the pictures is far better in reality. Thank you very much.
Can I make a comment? Two comments. There was a former vicar of this parish who was so highly trained by the parish that he meant to be Archdeacon of Bath. But he didn't live in Bath, he lived in Keynsham. And so he, when he wasn't being Archdeacon, he would go to St. John's, Keynsham,
okay,
to church.
Well, there we go.
So that's one bit. The other thing about Honey Street Mill, apart from the wonderful cafe, outdoor, beautiful south-facing cafe, is that it used to be a mill, not a flour mill or anything like that, but a sawmill, because they repaired the barges there. They brought in timber, they sawed it, and repaired the barges, so it's a sawmill. And also, if you go through that shop where you saw this stuff from Thailand, there's a quite remarkable crop circle.
Yes. So we visited that
museum.
Yes.
And it reviews crop circles in the most amazing way. I mean, you think, you know, some of them are balmy, some of them are, you know, people out to sort of create all sorts of incredible things. But there's a lot of science that's gone into thinking about crop circles, the changes that take place in the soil, the changes that take place in the plants and so forth. So you can, in there, if you want to know about crop circles, that's the place to go, because yes, it's the centre of crop circle land too.
I'm interested in crop circles, but more so chocolate brownies, all right? that was, you know, what rang my bell, you know?
Yes, yes, yeah, yes.
I think many of us are remembering mentioning Keynsham, but I think it was Radio Lux for a
years ago.
Horace Batchelor. The Infodrome. I always used to spell it. The Keynsham spelled K-E-Y.
Okay, yeah.
And you keep on thinking, so if you had such a wonderful method.
Why wasn't he a million?
Why? Not bothering, but anyway, that's enough of that one, I think. Right.
For the gradient where there was 20 plus
locks,
how long would it take a barge to get through?
I've read various different things. Some people say you can do it in as little as 2 to 3 hours. And that's going some. You've really got to, you know, have a workup and a free run, because you don't want other people who want to come down it for any particular section as well. And to my knowledge, there is no intercommunication between the bottom and the top. So you just have to judge it by eye, as if anyone's coming down and so on. But 2 to 3 hours, you could do it. I would say to anyone who's, you know, if you want to experience that, do it. If not, avoid that section like the plague, you know. Yeah. It's just too problematic. Too many things can go wrong.
Yeah.
Well, I've done the KMA three or four times now, and I've never done that staircase.
Yeah.
I've been to the bottom of it, much up to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And we turned around and went back. Now, I've also been into the Bristol Basin.
Right.
Which, 3 years ago, we were going to do the same. We got to the bottom block of Bath, but the river was running so high, we were advised not to do it, because we would end up in Bath very quickly.
Yes.
But we wouldn't get back.
No. No. Something I omitted to tell you that is just adjacent to Neptune's statue at the end there, there's a fantastic bar and restaurant. It's called Zazar's. Right, strange name. It's a world food restaurant. So you go in, and literally there's seating for about 400 or 500 people, and every type of indigenous food you can think of is there, and you can help yourself to as much as you like over a period of time for 12 quid. And it's unbelievable. Mexican, Spanish, Indian, Bengali, English, Italian, you name it. You can have a mix of any you like. Zazar's on the floating dock, just by Neptune statue.
On that, I do not intend to compete with my currents. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.